Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Franco family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
We protect turtle eggs in Florida. In fact, during the turtle hatching season, you will see signs, triple layers of signs around all the turtle nest over on Pensacola Beach. All of these signs that say, do not disturb sea turtle nest.
Dr. Bill Lyle on Focus on the Family Minute.
Then it tells you what the penalty is for disturbing sea turtles.
It's big.
You can have a $100,000 fine and spend 1 year in jail. Meanwhile, at that same time over on Pensacola, it was legal to perform an abortion up to 24 weeks gestation, even though we had babies surviving in our NICU at 23 weeks gestation. So how are we giving protection to pre-born sea turtles left and buried in the beach on Pensacola, yet we're not giving that same kind of protection for the babies in the womb?
More from Dr. Bill Lyle at FamilyMinute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Franco family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Right now, I've got a special going on all my Chatham & Wells mattress sets.
Rich London, the mattress specialist in Paso Robles, tell me more.
I'm taking 15% off my already low prices, which I'm the lowest anywhere. I'm significantly lower than Mattress Firm and online prices.
You'll find Rich London, the mattress specialist, at the corner of 13th and Riverside in Paso Robles.
Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story, brought to you by Frontier Floors and Window Coverings at 830 21st Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-7878 or online at frontierfloors.net.
Now, the rest of the story. Charles Fisk made pipe organs for churches and universities. He has been called the most influential American organ builder of the 20th century. A man of rare good fortune in that he did for money what he would gladly have done for nothing. His profession was the pursuit of his dreams, and to this he owed a nightmare. For this is the rest of the story. Charles Fisk grew up in Cambridge, Massachusetts. His teenage reputation was that of an electronics wizard. He was building tube amplifiers before there was such a term as high fidelity. Later, Charles would attend Harvard and Stanford. It was at Stanford where he realized that he could no longer cope with the nightmare and where he decided upon the career for which he is now famous. In 1954, he left the university to apprentice under renowned organ maker Walter Holt Kemp. And within 18 months, Fisk had earned a partnership in the Andover Organ Company. By 1959, he owned that company. And by 1962, he had moved to Gloucester, Massachusetts, as C.B. Fisk Incorporated. Long before, Charles had abandoned the electronic wizardry which had made him the talk of the town in his teen years. Indeed, there was something decidedly anti-technological in the Charles Fisk approach to organ making. First, all Fisk organs were tracker organs. No electronics, none at all. Just woods and rods and wires, as you might discover in a pipe organ centuries old. And Charles even quarreled with that one lonesome 20th century touch found in modern trackers, the electric blower motor. Now, he understood nobody wanted to stand around in the church basement pumping organ bellows nowadays, but he also understood that the organs of old rendered a slightly irregular, warbling sound, the result of those hand-pumped bellows. And Charles said the organ must become more than the machine that it is. It must seem alive. And so, in 1968, he proposed that the barely perceptible warble of days gone by be restored to the tracker organ, that the modern super-consistent electric blowers and wind supply regulators not be allowed to smudge the beauty, what he considered the natural grace of the past. Fisk's proposal was vigorously denounced by his colleagues at the time. It would take him a decade to see things his way. But the point is that Charles Fisk was a proud reactionary. He devoted his life to showing us why not all that we call progress is progress. With loving hands, Charles Fisk fashioned the charm of a thousand yesterdays from the same materials that had been used by our ancestors. Charles Fiske was a purist artist who invited only peace and beauty into his world and into ours, as though purposely, how shall I say this now, as though purposely diverting his gaze, and maybe ours, from some terrible vision, as though attempting to atone for a past unpardonable sin. For there was a private nightmare in the life of Charles Fiske. It happened before Stanford, before Harvard, when the slender brown-haired boy genius in electronics was sent to Chicago to work on the top-secret Manhattan Project. And then at the age of 20, to the laboratories of Los Alamos, New Mexico, where he spent the remainder of World War II, and where the same hands, lovingly, repentantly fashioning instruments of sonic glory and spiritual peace, where those hands once created instruments of terror and destruction. You see, it was organ builder Charles Fiske who, before turning from a brilliant career in electronics and nuclear physics, it was that same Charles Fiske who helped to devise the detonators for the world's first atomic bombs. And now you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Buy the Book Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Vealey, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. I'm also an investigative reporter with Cal Coast News. Go to Cal Coast News, the best local source for news. Today we are talking national politics. We're focusing primarily on the presidential election. The polls have changed dramatically in the past 2 weeks. Harris had a fairly clear lead in most of the polls. Now, while in the straight polls, she still has a slight lead, when you go to the betting odds are currently giving Trump 58% over her 40%. There is a huge difference in what is going on right now, and we're talking about why. We have attorney Mike Nolan and local political watchdog Eric Gorham. And we are discussing a number of different things with these campaigns. Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to bring to the conversation?
I wanted to talk about Harris for a second. I viewed a video last week that was done on Tucker Carlson's show where he interviewed Harmeet Dhillon, who's a very famous lawyer that talks around the national networks quite a bit. She spoke about Harris because she knew her for 30 years in San Francisco as another attorney. That interview, which is almost 2 hours long, was extremely enlightening. And by the time you get done listening to that or watching it, you would never want that woman near being president of a country. It's really shocking because she knows her like the back of her hand. And just another example, you guys were talking about how to pronounce her name, afraid to say it because it might probably be the wrong way. You know, it's interesting that she pronounced her name three different ways herself. And I have never, ever known anybody to pronounce their name three different ways themselves. It's just so weird to me. And so I've been looking into her quite a bit. And you know, when she's on TV, she never answers what she's going to do. And to tell you the truth, I really believe she's not that smart. Trump, one thing about Trump that people like is he'll answer a question. He'll give you his side, and he'll tell you why. She hasn't given us one lick of what she's going to do when she becomes president. She just refers back to her childhood. I was in middle class. It's not that. It's almost every interview she does the same thing. They talk about the Republican Party is a threat to democracy. When they did this presidential coup, which we have never seen like this before, they put the person who in 4 years ago in the Democratic primary was the first to get knocked out. Nobody liked her then. The Democrats didn't like her either. Now they've forced this thing onto the American public, whether you're a Democrat or Republican. She's there to take the helm of the country, and she's never had a single vote. And I think it's really frightening to see what could happen here if she gets elected, and that's what I got to say about it.
So just out of curiosity, when she was saying her name in different ways, did she have a different dialect also? And I say that in jest, just because she seems to talk certain ways when she's in front of certain audiences. You know, she has that kind of chameleon thing going for her.
Yeah, I mean, it's when you watch her, I mean, she's been on, like, well, she was on Fox yesterday, but the contrast between Trump and her when they're meeting with people is so extraordinarily different. And, you know, Trump will talk about all this stuff. He repeats it, but he talks. He gives rallies, like 2-3 rallies a day. And then she's been hiding all this stuff since she's been put in, and you try to pin her down to a particular answer for a question, you'll never get it. She never gives it. And I think they're afraid of her talking, you know, doing word salads and stuff like that. But I think it's way deeper than that. I think that we've never seen anything like this in this country before. I can't think of anything close to this in our history of this country. So it's very frightening. You know, if people want to vote for her because she's a Democrat, that's one thing. But what are you getting in this package? I don't understand it. Maybe she's part black and she's a female. Maybe that's why. But is that really who you want to put in there? When Putin says, I want Harris to win the election, what does that tell you, you know? So, no, I think there's a lot to it, and I would recommend the listeners to watch that video on YouTube. It's very enlightening, and I was pretty shocked by what she was saying about her. It was pretty interesting.
Thank you very much for calling in. And Mike, do you what do you think about what the caller just said?
Yeah, I guess my trouble is that she hasn't had the background of campaigning in a competitive two-party race to understand you just can't sit there and look pretty and just deflect questions. You actually have to answer them and provide substance to what the voters want. And basically, you know, her campaign, I'm not Joe Biden and I'm not Donald Trump, and that's why you should vote for me. And that's not enough for for the 10 or 20% that are kind of persuadable one way or the other. That doesn't persuade anybody to support you.
And one of the other things that I've been looking at is the change in race voting. In California, I was very surprised to recently look at a couple reports saying, you know, we're still a very Democratic state. The bulk of the people here are Democrats. But the Democratic Party is not really moving in. They're not really gaining any percentages. The Klein to State aren't gaining. And the Republican Party is gaining in the amount and the percentage of voters that are now wanting to become Republicans. What is caused, and they've looked at it, it's primarily Hispanic and black voters. What do you think is causing this change from Hispanic and black voters to the Republican Party?
Well, I was just reading Michael Barone in the Washington Examiner. He's a really good analyst, and they've been around for a long time. And his take on, because he talks in his recent article about the experience in California and the growth of Republican registration among Hispanic and African American voters, and you know, he believes if the Democrats were always the outsider part, it was a Democratic Party traditionally is a coalition of outsiders. But as people move into the middle class and, you know, generations go by, and you get older, all of a sudden you're moving into the, you're not an outsider anymore. You're moving into the middle of America, the heart of it. And if you do that, all of a sudden, you know, the coalition doesn't seem as inviting anymore. And I remember one writer basically saying what happens is that the new people into a party have a tendency to push the old people, and by old people, the traditional base, out. And so you have this where the African-American community, for instance, is a fairly conservative, socially conservative group. And as you bring in social revolutionaries who want to upend everything into your political party, you're starting to push those people out. And they're looking for maybe someplace else to be, and the only alternative is the Republican Party. It's the so in other words, it's the you invite new people in to make your parties bigger, more diverse. It has a tendency to push people who have been established in your party to want to go into the other to change sides.
No, I think you're right, and I saw a few things this year. The low-hanging fruit, and I think this was more with probably white America, and especially in this county, because I think we saw a boost in this county of Republicans. We kind of lost control years back, but we're starting to gain up some ground. And a lot of it, of that, I feel like were people that decided to be NPP, maybe because of Trump, or maybe because they didn't like something else that happened in the past in the last 8 to 12 years. And all of a sudden they went, well, I want, and during the primary, they go, I can't vote for Trump. Well, you know, I can't tell you how many people came into the Republican headquarters. Why didn't I get, why don't I get to vote for Trump? It's like, well, how are you registered? And they go, oh, NPP. Well, you don't get to vote for a presidential candidate in that. And then I think you kind of went over the African-American, but I think the Hispanics, I think, aren't that far off. You have a family. Most of those the people coming over here are very family oriented, and the people that are established here, and they have those kind of what a lot of people would refer to as conservative values with their families, etc. And we have all this stuff being kind of slammed down our throat by the Democrat Party. And I think what you see with Hispanics is they're going, wait, these people, these, you know, I thought these were my people, but maybe they're not. They don't hold my values.
Yeah, I was listening to Victor Davis Hanson interviewed the other day, and he was saying how Mike Rowe was interviewing him. He was saying how in his where he lives in Fresno or south of Fresno in the country, he says it's Hispanic immigrants came into California and they tended to be Democratic. He says now I don't know any Hispanic male over 40 who is not voting for Trump. And I know a lot, he said. He knows everybody. It's a big ethnic group and it's one of the biggest population groups. And he's just saying, no, that once you get in and you start, a lot of people, what they want to do is work and get the rewards for working. And when policies, especially the progressive policies of the Democrats, raise taxes and take money away, it makes them think twice. And so once what happens, it's the same thing with Ronald Reagan needed millions of votes of Democrats to support him to get elected governor in 1966, or at least hundreds of thousands. He won by a million votes, but the Democrats had a huge voter registration advantage, and there were a lot of. But he was able to do that. He knew how to talk to Democrats. Joe Biden in 1972, he got elected because he convinced people who voted for Richard Nixon to vote for him also, a Nixon-Biden voter, because Delaware went easily for Richard Nixon in 72. And Biden had to defeat an incumbent, well-respected Republican senator who had been served as governor. So the Democrats, my annoyance is, it's not that I'm pro-Republican, put it that way. I'm annoyed with the Democrats that they're not making the sales pitch to the voters to win an election. What they're doing is trying to gin up their supporters, and as they call it, a turnout election. Just get the Liberal Democrats out the vote, and we'll win the election. And historically, that's not enough to women. You have to make a sale to the people in the middle of the road, the independent voters. And if you don't do that long enough, they're gonna start rejecting your political party. You know, it's I remember Lyndon Johnson, Jack Kennedy campaigning in 1960 when I was a kid. I remember reading Making of the President in 1960, where Johnson said we have to carry Texas in 1960 because for the last two elections, Texas had voted for Eisenhower, the Republicans. And he said if Texas votes to one, it can vote once Republican, twice okay, but three times, well, that's the beginning of a movement. You know, once you stop voting for the Democrats, you, even though you're a Democrat, after a while, you're going to say, you know, I should be a Republican.
Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to bring to the conversation?
Well, you guys were just talking about how the Republican Party is starting to switch away from the Democrats. And it reminded me of a joke that Ronald Reagan said, which I don't know if you've heard or not, but little kid was sitting outside the Democratic convention and everybody started coming out and he had a big box of puppies and he kept holding one up and saying, get your Democratic puppy, get your Democratic puppy. About 2 weeks later, the Republicans had their convention and the reporter was standing out there and the people started coming outside and he says, get your Republican puppy, get your Republican puppy. And the news guy has come over and he says, hey, I was here 2 weeks ago and you were trying to say they were Democratic puppies. What's changed? He says, well, now their eyes are open.
You're right.
Thank you very much for calling in. And we're going to take a break from a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back with more with Mike Nolan and Eric Gorham.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages ending mixed with the Dow notching a new record close following robust earnings reports and upbeat economic data. Chip stocks were among the best performers today following Taiwan Semiconductor's strong earnings report. Its stock rose nearly 10%. The world's largest contract chip maker beat Wall Street estimates and forecast a jump in fourth quarter revenue driven by demand for artificial intelligence chips. And shares of Travelers rose 9%. The auto and homeowner insurance provider delivered record third quarter profits that blew past Wall Street estimates. The Dow winners, Travelers, American Express, and Visa. The Dow decliners, Home Depot, United Health Group, and IBM. The Dow rising 161 points for its 39th record close of the year. The NASDAQ higher by 7. S&P 500 down a point. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Kathy Barsky, invested in you.
Hey, Donald Trump Jr. here.
Welcome back to Sound Off. I'm
had some technical difficulties there.
We are having a technical issue, but I think it's fine. And
if you can't hear us, call in and tell us.
One of the things I do think is impacting what is going on is people is the question. Are you better off now than you were before? Mike, can you hear us?
Yes. Yeah.
No, for sure. I think that is a big one. And if you look at inflation, the way it's been, et cetera, it's hard to say we're better off. I don't know what your thoughts are, Mike.
Oh, I'm sorry. Say that.
I think that if you look at the last 4 years of inflation, it's really, you know, it's hard to say you're better off than you were under Trump.
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, to be fair, we're still in the ripple effect from the COVID pandemic and what was done to try to combat that. And that's had a tremendous effect on small businesses. Lots of, we still haven't recovered from that. That's one thing. Two, but who do you blame for that? Is the massive crackdown in the first year of Joe Biden's administration about meeting groups and things like that.
The new normal, I think they were trying to call it, or trying to sell.
Yeah, exactly right. Now people are. I live in Davis, and I still see once in a while I see people driving around in their car, in their Tesla, with their windows rolled up and their mask on, with no one else in the car. And I thought, okay. All right. I don't understand that, except people are clinging to this. We gotta do all this. I would say one thing about the economy is that I have over the years, and I may have mentioned this before, but I have this test. If I go out in my car and I can drive down and any street on a trip to the store or something, and I see cars with a headlight out, that tells me people, the number of cars with headlights out tells me that disposable income is down. People are deferring maintenance on their cars. And I just want to say, I've never seen so many. It just happens all the time. I see two or three cars every little trip I make, driving down the street with a headlight out, or a parking light out, or a brake light out. It's like, oh, all right. That's my idea of how the economy is doing, at least in my neck of the woods.
I
would suggest try that out. Try that. Look, notice the cars that don't have headlights.
Well, I will tell you, my expenses, you know, have doubled in the last, literally doubled in the last 3 years, more than doubled. And I do believe that a lot of people are seeing that they do not have the disposable income. They're having to work more. Their kids aren't traveling like they did. They're not having the lifestyle they had when they were the same age. And, you know, it's the, they're looking at, I think it has a lot to do with the economy. I also think that parents are very, they put their children first. A lot of, you know, families, there's a lot of families that families are very important. And there are people that are upset about some of the push for some of the things like the shared bathrooms in school. And there are people that are changing positions because of that.
Yeah. No, when you have, and people have mentioned this, when you have, a really intelligent person was appointed the Supreme Court Justice Brown Jackson, and but at her confirmation she couldn't define what a woman was, and I was like, what? I'm not a geneticist, I'm not a scientist. It's like, okay. And that had people remember that. And how can you protect a segment of society that traditionally has been needed protection if you can't identify or define who those people are? And I've heard this a number of times where people are saying, no, the Democrats seem more concerned about men who want to be women than about women.
Right.
So there, that's
I see the other kind of battle that you see is a lot of Democrats are saying, well, look at Wall Street. Wall Street's doing great, but we all live on Main Street. And I haven't looked at Wall Street as being an indicator of the economy. I mean, it is, don't get me wrong, but for the common person, it's Main Street. You really have to look at, and I think I see the, you know, Harris, Biden administration, you know, look at Wall Street, look at Wall Street. Well, how does Wall Street affect me? You know, it might affect my 401k, et cetera, or if it collapses, yeah, it's going to affect me, as we saw in, what, 2009, 2008. But really, it's how is Main Street doing? And I don't. Main Street's not doing well. It hasn't been.
Welcome to
It hasn't.
Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to bring to the conversation?
Well, as far as the cost of everything going up, the Biden commie administration chose to take away our energy independence and raise the cost of fuel greatly, which caused the price of everything to go up.
No, you're right. And one of the things I find interesting is when you watch how that market works, and I know I'm getting off a little bit here, but you know, I know Biden, when he came in and he said he was going to shut down the pipelines, things don't tank that fast. Well, they do. And when Trump came in, everything went up because, you know, these businesses say, okay, Trump's going to allow us to do this. When Biden comes in and says he's not, you know, I personally, I'll give you guys all a stock tip. It's worked good for me. I like to day trade, so I don't suggest it unless you really get into day trading. But on Wall Street, every action is an overreaction, period. So when a president says something, everybody overreacts, and it goes up or it goes down. And, you know, I found it interesting when he took office and he basically said he was going to eliminate the pipeline, how fast everything tanked. And him saying, well, it couldn't do with me because it hasn't gotten into effect yet. But it's all words. That's how Wall Street works. I mean, it's interesting.
It was all...
Yeah, but Wall Street... Wall Street's trying to guess the future, right?
Right.
And I was just reading the paper here where the... it's just not Biden. It's a progressive agenda. Governor Newsom just passed a bill of regulating... has signed a bill regulating gasoline in the state to try to bring it down. And the problem with that, of course, is California hasn't built a new refinery in 50 years. And Phillips 66 just said they're going to close one of their refineries in Los Angeles. Just to walk away from it.
Right. And then you look at it's hard for gas not to go up here when we still have cap and trade and we have all these gas taxes that keep rolling out. I mean, it's not... I don't find it to be the industry's problem. I think California is really good at creating its own problems and blaming industry.
And, yeah, caller, I agree with you. I look at some of the worldwide news, and when fuel prices go up anywhere, it impacts every single industry is impacted by an increase in fuel prices. So then they have to raise their prices. And if you are someone with a small business and your prices haven't gone up substantially, you're having trouble staying in business and feeding your family and, you know, buying what you need. So it is all the way around. It does have an impact. Thank you very much for calling in. Yeah.
And the other part of that, I don't think people realize how many things are made from petroleum. I mean, you should see just in the landscape or any other kind of business that uses pipe, if you've seen the prices over the last really 12 years of pipe, how it's affected. There was a time where a week could go by and it would go up 100%. And it makes it very hard to bid things because everything's made from petroleum, not just pipe. I mean, there's all the plastics, et cetera, and it affects the price, not only of just transporting these goods, but making them.
Yeah, no, all the wind turbines are going to build off of Morro Bay are all made out of plastic,
right?
Oil-based.
Right.
And they're lubricated with oil.
I there's a lot of battle over that. I'm wondering now if it's even going to go through. Let's change a little bit to the immigration argument. I noticed that there's been two things that have happened, and the Carolinas, the voting has changed more toward Trump since the hurricanes, and there are people angry that there is not Now, the argument is it doesn't matter. They're two separate FEMA piles of money. But FEMA, like any other group, if you may have your, you may have the FEMA funds, and you may say, okay, this much we're going to do with this, and this much to this. But if a large amount of FEMA funding is going to people that are in the country illegally, that's going to impact the amount of money that you have to spend on other things. Do you think that is part of what has gone on in the last 2 weeks with the changing demographic towards Trump, the change of voter support for Trump in some of those states?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's North Carolina and Georgia were hard hit. I have a brother-in-law in South Carolina who's out here for, my son got married and he was out here to visit, but his house in South Carolina was still no power. A week after the, a week, 10 days after the hurricane hit. So as a consequence, there's a, and I was reading where somebody was pointing out that the real, people get angry at, the federal government when, or, you know, the emergency response when about 6 days after the storm hits or the earthquake hits or, you know, the disaster strikes. And that's, it is a struggle because as the, you know, recovery efforts are basically state driven, but the, traditionally the president always sees this as a great way to, whoever the president is, sees this as a way of showing constituents that they're on the job, they're working hard. And they're not doing that now. And that's just the problem. Part of that is that there's no, they're just like, oh, yeah, so, okay. They're bad for them. Give them $750, and that's that's all you're going to get.
Right.
And so it's... people, the problem is people who think, who have traditionally relied on, think that the federal government will always give them a safety net, find out, no, it's not there, that you're actually, you have to take care of yourself. And that's and you have to take care of your own members of your community first. It's your town, your county, your state. And, I think that response has hurt the Democratic campaign in the Southeast.
Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to bring to the conversation today?
Oh, I have so much on my list that I have to narrow it down. So you're talking about FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, which is supposed to be for the citizens of the United States of America. And for the first responders to help keep us safe in an emergency. How does immigration fit into that? Why do they even think they could split that agency into yet another entity and put out money for illegal people? This is just so wrong on so many levels. I just don't know why every single citizen is not screaming at the top of their lungs right now. Doesn't make any sense.
No, I believe you're right. It's but it also tells you something about where we're living at right now. We have very short memories for one, and then we also, people just really don't pay attention, and then there's so much rhetoric that goes with it. Oh, it's amazing. Just I hate to say it, and I'm not talking about you in particular, but people just do not educate themselves. So I feel like the way they did in the 90s, 80s, 70s, etc. You know, when you
exactly.
go back in time.
Which is why I'm no longer a Democrat. I was a Democrat for 30 years. I was in L.A. That was part of the reason. working and getting a job, you know, you kind of had to be. But I chose to, you know, open my eyes and see the world around me. And it's not the same Democratic. You can't even call it the Democratic Party anymore. It's not the same as it was in the 60s, 70s, 80s. It has done a complete change, and I don't even know why we even call it the Democratic Party. It's awful. It's awful. And that's all I'm going to say, because my list is way too long.
Thank you for calling in. Mike, what do you think about that? Do you think the Democratic Party has lost its way in that regard?
Yeah, it's evolving to a point where it's kind of hard to recognize it. It used to be the Democratic Party 80, 90 years ago was a conservative party. And Franklin Roosevelt brought together, was able to hold conservatives and progressives, 19th century progressives, Theodore Roosevelt progressives, liberals, into that, organize that party. And the but what's happened is that the conservatives got pushed out. And when Franklin Roosevelt was president, it wasn't the Republicans that were opposing him. It were the conservative Democrats in the Congress. And that stopped, for instance, packing the Supreme Court and things along that line. So a progressive type of policies. So, yeah, the Democrats have kind of jettisoned the conservative component and has just become more and more progressive. It's funny when they talk about this theory of moderate Democrats. There are no moderate Democrats anymore. I think Victor Davis Hanson put it. He was also saying that you talk to you're only moderate Democrats only when you talk to the Democratic politicians privately. Publicly, they can't have any confrontation with the hard progressive left. And part of the idea with the Homeland Security, you know, I'll put it one point. The Homeland Security, the agency, the Department of Homeland Security, you know, came out of following 9/11 and the George Bush administration, and George W. Bush. And I remember at the time saying, "This isn't going to be good because it's put in all these conflicting departments, all under the Homeland Security." So that it's not just FEMA, but it's also the Secret Service. It's also the Office of Immigration. It just become a bizarre, it's a nightmare of bureaucracy. It's because it's got the customs. It has the border protection. It has the citizenship. It goes through. Anyway, what I'm saying is it's not a good. And I'll criticize this. It was a mistake in the Bush administration to hammer this all together, and it's a real monster. And that's what happens: is that money in the for the department gets siphoned off to things like immigration or borders, the border, or you know, managing migration into the United States, and problems dealing with. Natural disasters gets shunted aside. Oh yeah, well, and then you have the Secret Service gets, you know, as we saw with it happened in Butler, Pennsylvania. You know, they end up being poorly managed. Remember, the Coast Guard is under Homeland Security as well. The people at the airport. I'm looking at their chart here. Oh, that's the TSA, the Transportation Security Administration. So it just has a lot of stuff in there, and it just underscores the problem. It underscores when Donald Trump talks about the administrative state, how we have to bring that heel. And Homeland Security is a victim of its own success. It's gotten so big nobody can understand it, and no one's happy with it.
Right, and kind of for me, getting back to the caller was, you know, I think what you saw with the Democrat Party is, and you saw a lot of this during Trump and Clinton when they were going against each other. What I heard over and over again from probably the more moderate Democrats is I didn't leave the party. The party left me.
Right.
You know, and all of a sudden now I'm a Republican by default because they represent my values, and the Democrat Party just went away from them so radically I can't stand to be there. And I think, unfortunately, nationally, state-wise, et cetera, the GOP should have capitalized on that harder. They should have went after things a little bit harder because I think they could have turned a lot of voters.
Well, I think you're right. That was a famous Reagan could talk to Democrats because he had been one. He had been a liberal Democrat. I think in 1952 he supported Adlai Stevenson against Dwight Eisenhower. And Donald Trump had been a Democrat, had been supported the Democratic Party as a young man in the 90s, and you know, in New York, that's what you have to do. So he can talk a language. You know, Trump's language is as if he's not talking to a banker. He's talking to a construction guy. He's talking to a guy who operates a bulldozer. That's just the way he talks. And it's I saw for Maldonado was criticized because he said that Trump has extreme language because he's from New York. And that's true. New Yorkers are English in New York is a in your face kind of syntax, which other places, especially out in California or Midwest, are kind of surprised at.
Right, and I think, you know, I'm going to keep going with that caller because it made me think of a bunch of things, because she said, you know, in Los Angeles, she felt like she had to be a Democrat whether she was or not. But I think what interested me is I went back and you see Trump when he was a Democrat, and you see he was kind of a media darling. He, you know, he had his TV shows. He was going on The View all the time. They treated him great. I mean, what would you imagine? You know, as soon as he said, "I'm a Republican and I'm running for president," you saw just the knives come out. I'm sure he felt stabbed in the back. I mean, a lot of people that literally loved him at one point hated his guts overnight. And it's kind of interesting how that all works. So I don't really see it on the other side. We're usually upset if somebody leaves, but we don't see the daggers come out the way they did with Trump.
You're exactly right. As soon as Trump said... He got better press when he was talking about running as a third party candidate for the Reform Party. He got better press then because they thought, he just split the vote. But once he came out as a Republican, that was beyond the pale. And it's been growing for some time, and it's infected the news media to a point. I talked to a reporter who told me back in 2000 that it hit them when on election night the original call was for Florida to vote for Al Gore, and that Gore had been elected president. And this reporter said, I'm there sitting and I hear cheering, and I look up, it's all the people in the studio, the technicians, the cameramen, they're all cheering for Gore. They're who won the election. And he just and other reporters, and it's just like, That's not what we were supposed to do. We're supposed to be a news organization, run right straight down the middle. But it's become more and more a team sport type of thing, and you've got to support your team. And I think that goes down to what the vice president wants to do. It's a team. You got to support your team, regardless of who the candidate is. You've got to turn out and vote for them, whoever the candidate should be.
And I
don't think that's going to work.
I see the same thing. I am shocked that women are voting. You know, there's more women want Harris and more men want Trump, and there is a divide by the sexes. I don't know how we're getting to where we're looking at, you know, issues such as what your gender is or what color your skin is, rather than what you stand for. And I'm going to bring a caller in. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll let you go. Go ahead.
Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to add to?
We missed him. Call back.
Go ahead, Mike.
Just call back on that. But it's the your political parties are dynamic. The Republicans and the Democrats, but you see this slow shift where the Republicans are becoming a working class party, thanks to Donald Trump, and the Democrats are becoming the party of the elite, Wall Street, well-educated, you know, college-educated elite people. And it's kind of funny to see this transformation. And the real problem is that if Vice President Harris gets elected, what is her mandate? Where is the public support to support her for her decisions on how to govern? And that's not going to be, you know, not being Donald Trump is not a strategy of governing the country. You know what I mean? You have to have some idea of like, yeah, I'm going to do this. Well, where will the support come for her when, you know, she has to make a tough decision? And I don't think that's going to be there. And I think that's a real problem for the Democrats down the road.
I do agree that having the main thing that you don't like Trump is your primary reason that you should vote for that person. Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to bring to the conversation?
I don't know if you guys have talked about this, but I don't think so because I missed some of the show today. But I wonder if any of you have paid attention to Candace Owens' research over the last month, where she basically researches Harris's ancestry and proves that Harris is not black, and even had Harris's family members call in or write in, whatever, and state that she is not black and that her ancestors were actually slaveholders. And so my question is if any of you have heard that, and then my comment would be is if she's going to lie about her own race, then obviously she has issues with telling the truth, and that's a scary sign in any leader at all. And that's my question for the day.
Well, do you remember, I'll just answer, you know, remember Malcolm Gladwell? They wrote the Tipping Point and a number of books, of interesting books about life. And he's an academic in Canada, but from Jamaica, where Vice President Harris's family came from. And I remember him writing about Jamaica was such a weird place because they had 32 classifications of race. There was pure white, and then there was pure black, and there were 30 classifications in between, depending on what your ancestry was, how far away it was. And it was just a weird place. So it's a lot different than I guess I'll put it this way. Jamaica is a interesting place, but it's hard to, the problem comes down to, you know, where is the racial classification that Americans can understand? So I'll take her at her word. And I believe that it's her racial background, but I'm there. That's all I'm going to say.
Did you look at her book? The only reason I was bringing it up too is because someone had pointed out pictures that Harris had put in her book of her and her paternal grandmother, and they've proven that the pictures of the grandmother was actually some help in the house, and it was not even a relative, and her paternal grandmother had died before she was even born.
Yeah, I agree there's a certain way you could fudge that. It's sort of like the those two. We have a family in south of San Luis Obispo and in Montecito. But one of them was the husband is the Duke of Sussex, and the wife is the Duchess of Sussex. And well, you know, she's a minority. She's African American, and you want to scratch her, and should be, you know. The idea of we're talking about reparations in the state, is she going to get is the Duchess of Sussex and her kids? Oh, yeah, they're African-American. They're going to get reparations? You scratch your head. Say, well, no, that's... At a certain point, the real problem is, at a certain point, race doesn't matter. At a certain point, the society grows up, and we're at that position where we're moving beyond race, and we're just trying to just be real people towards each other, you know, kind people within our community. Everyone welcome.
So, yep. So real quick.